Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem, mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Stu does America.
Do something positive for your nation. Subscribe to this stupid show on YouTube. YouTube.com/Stu Does America is the place to go. Hit the bell for notifications. Do all the things. Get your Stu Does America merch at StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10 for 10% off your entire order. I'm going to bring in Greg Tillman today. He's got a new documentary out on the Oklahoma City bombing for Netflix. It's really good, and we're going to talk about that. We have Harvard. They've been effing around, and we're going to see how much they find out coming up in a little bit. They've moved on to the finding out stage, which is not the most fun stage. But we start by doing moral murderers. Yes, you have to understand, some murderers are moral. They're doing it for good reason, all of their murders. That's the thing we're supposed to understand right now. And I will say, I have a bit of a different standard than many in the media on this particular story. And I'm going to tell you about it here because it's important. A lot of people over the past few years, based on massive studies shown of mass shooters, have decided to stop using the names of killers. And I applaud that effort. We talked to one of the people who wrote a book about the studies a couple of years ago on this program, and he talked about all the evidence that shows that these people are absolutely motivated by the types of attention they get after these incidents go down. They are known forever, even if they have a negative view overall, by the community that view their exploits negatively, they make a little show of themselves in their little communities, and they become famous and feared and talked about for a very long time. And that is a motivation. It's one of the most direct ways to cut this. So a lot of places, I know we did it, I think Daily Wire did it, I think a bunch of media institutions have done it, and they stopped naming mass shooters. The case of the UnitedHealthcare CEO being murdered in the streets has not been treated that way by most. Why? I don't know. I think this one's a more clear, and I went over the studies. I talked to you about them at the time. There is absolute evidence of that, you know, fame and this notoriety is a motivating factor for people copycatting mass shootings. That's absolutely a known thing. This one, I think, is even more direct, frankly. I don't have all the studies because this one just happened. But the way this guy who murdered the CEO at UnitedHealthcare has been treated by the media, by fans online, people basically treating him like he's this heartthrob who did something wonderful and brave, which is, by the way, to remind you, he shot somebody in the back when they weren't looking. That's not brave. That's just pathetic. In every other context in human history, that's been seen as pathetic. And by the way, every time a leftist would tell you that a police officer shoots, a person who had a gun pointed at the officer, but then turned around for a second and he was hit in the back, that's an excuse to throw the police officer in jail in every circumstance. But of course, it's bravery when this dolt does it. And I guess we're supposed to be in love with him because he took down some healthcare CEO, and apparently he's attractive. I mean, people love the unibrow these days, apparently. So we're not going to show you his picture. We're not going to tell you his name. We're not going to feed into any more of the nonsensical sort of hero theory that's been developing around this lunatic. That's not going to happen here. That's just a stance that I'm taking, and I think it's one that we all should take. This guy is building this sort of like, I mean, it's almost to the level where they're going to make Anthony Fauci candles for the guy. Okay, this is insane. What he did was murder. He just murdered an innocent man for no reason. And we'll get into that in a little bit. But there's sort of this like cult forming around this particular murderer. And it's being led by a lot of crazy people online, but also like journalists with reputations that are supposed to be impeccable, journalists who work for the Washington Post and the New York Times and all of this. And, it's getting out of control. Taylor Lorenz is the one I'm referring to there. She did work for the New York Times. She did work for the Washington Post. She's now out on her own. And, you know, part of it might be just and she was always erratic with facts. She was constantly doing things that were journalistically unethical and improper, in my view. She lost. I mean, I don't know if she would say she lost the jobs. Certainly the talk was that she was pushed out of the Times and amazingly hired by the Washington Post, and then she was eventually left the Post after. This is when she said bad things about Joe Biden. That was the thing that crossed the line. She was too mean to Joe Biden. That was just way too much for anyone to take. Not all of her other horrible reporting. But Taylor Lorenz had a heinous defense of this particular horrible murderer that we're speaking of today. Called him a morally good man. Now, we have a lot of weird ideas of what moral good is these days, I will say. And that, frankly, goes all over the political spectrum. I don't think we have any idea anymore what moral good is. We just kind of make it up. Whatever we agree with seems to be the moral good. Taylor Lorenz, though, is completely insane. We've talked about her a bunch of times. She's an insane person. Again, these are my views. My opinions are my own. But it's true, in my view. She's nuts. And she, you know, it's fascinating that these massive institutions held this woman up as the person to be the arbiter of the entire digital space. What was positive, what was negative in internet culture? This was her. This was her beat for multiple mainstream publications. Here she is talking. I believe this is for some sort of CNN piece about this murderer, and I guess, I don't think they're looking at it negatively. It certainly seems like the host of this is kind of in to Taylor Lorenz's analysis. I don't know if that's true. Maybe the full documentary will reveal the truth on that one. But here she is talking about how wonderful this murderer is.
Hilarious to see these millionaire media pundits on TV clutching their pearls about someone standing a murderer when this is the United States of America, as if we don't lionize criminals, as if we don't have, you know, we don't stand murderers of all sorts, and we give them Netflix shows. There's a huge disconnect between the narratives and the angles the sort of mainstream media pushes and what the American public feels. And you see that in moments like this. And I can tell you, I saw the biggest audience growth that I've ever seen.
No shocker.
Because people were like, oh, somebody, some journalist, is actually speaking to the anger that we feel.
The women who got her outside court in New York.
So you're going to see women especially that feel like, oh, my God, right? Like, here's this man who's revolutionary, who's famous, who's handsome, who's young, who's smart. He's a person that seems this like this morally good man, which is hard to find.
I love that. That they connected on that point. It's hard to find morally good men, unlike this murderer. Yeah, you can all relate to that. That basically read as if she was trying to win him over on a video dating service. It is pathetic in every way. Like, I can't tell if she actually thinks he's a moral man or she just wants to have sex with him. That's what it honestly seems like, watching her analysis of the situation. It is the most disgusting and pathetic thing. And honestly, both the Washington Post and the New York Times should take 6 months off and not publish anything. They should stop printing their newspapers on a daily basis for 6 months to figure out how they hired this person. She is absolutely pathetic in every way. There's so much in just that clip. Honestly, we could do the entire monologue on just that one clip. First of all, she's criticizing all these rich media types. I don't know, like the types you've been working with, I'm sure she's made plenty. Maybe she's not quite a millionaire. Maybe she blows her money on, aphrodisiacs to attract murderers. But generally speaking, I'm sure she's pretty darn well off. And I know the criticism there is laughable. She says that, oh gosh, we act as if we don't lionize criminals and give them Netflix shows. That does happen. Well, we do sometimes lionize criminals. Most of the time we don't. The Netflix shows, we have a director of a Netflix documentary on about the Oklahoma City bombing later on in this program. It's not a lie. Because Timothy McVeigh is featured in a Netflix show, it does not mean they're lionizing him. It is a very negative picture of what Timothy McVeigh did. If you're going to do a documentary about the guy who murdered a dad and a husband, and a CEO of a healthcare company, it should have that same tone. It should be negative, not positive. When you murder people, you're supposed to be treated negatively by society. I know, Taylor, this is tough, Tay-Tay, to figure out in your very minuscule brain. But that is legitimately where we are in this country. And that's the country, that's where she's going down. So it's a nonsensical criticism. And it's funny to watch this because it's you hear echoes of like conservative critiques of media in here, right? Like, oh, the mainstream media is just doing these things. And you realize how insane this is. Like, the left owns the mainstream media. Look at the political donations. It's something like 97% of these institutions are donating to the left. This is not some like right-wing conspiracy against your boy. That's not what's going on here. And she finally goes with the ultimate idiocy of not just this story, but our entire era. She says this as if it's a defense, as if this is a positive thing to say about the world. She says, and I can tell you, I saw the biggest audience growth that I have ever seen when I started talking about this murderer and kind of giving voice to the anger. Yeah, that's because people are awful. They're horrible. And every incentive online is the wrong incentive. You should know this as someone who covered the internet media and social media for a long time for two major publications. The incentives are all screwed up. And the fact is, when you say horrible, horrible things, you are rewarded with more and more followers. When you find people online who are, for whatever reason, maybe they're on the right saying Jews are bad, or they're on the left on the Hamas side of the aisle and the Democratic Party, like Taylor Lorenz basically is, saying, oh, Hamas is pretty wonderful. Was October 7th really that bad? Yeah, that gets you a lot of followers. That's the problem. And when you're led, when your entire ideology and morals are led by that, I got a lot of followers after I said this, you are destined and certain to go down the wrong road. You are destined and certain to go down a road that makes you a horrible human being. And honestly, this is probably where this murderer got down this road as well. I made enough. I was going to make more fun of her for just wanting to obviously just hook up with this guy, but I think I left enough there. There was a little bit more of this clip. Let me give you a little more.
I'm sure you wouldn't like to be compared to a Trump supporter. But some of how people cannot understand why people have sympathies for strikes me as the same as a lot of media not understanding why people support Trump.
It's not the same
at all. I
totally
agree.
It's because a lot of people are just really, really desperate.
They want somebody to take on the system. They want somebody to tear down these barbaric establishment institutions.
Ah, yes. Let me tell you about the Washington Post and New York Times reporter telling us about the establishment institutions that are a problem in this country. Is there an ounce of self-awareness anywhere near this person? Apparently not. The barbaric establishment institution she's talking about are not her former employees, of course, or employers, of course. What she's talking about is the healthcare industry. You know, the one where, like, when you get cancer and they pay for your cancer treatments. Now, obviously, I understand that there are problems with our healthcare system. It is the best one in the world. I know people don't like that. They like to get it free and delayed. I know that's such a wonderful thing. A free, quote unquote, free, where they don't pay a payment when they get treatment. Instead, they just pay it in taxes and it's quote unquote free to them. And they like waiting 6 to 8 months for an appointment. I know that's a wonderful system that we all should be. We should also point out that the whole reason any of those systems even operate is because of all the innovations this system brought to them. So whatever, you want to go down this road, it's a stupid left-wing criticism that honestly is so boring at this point. But like, what are we talking about here? This is one of the most fascinating things. Now, the culture and the cult of this personality of this particular person is bizarre. There's sites, you know, social media feeds that just point out pictures of how wonderful the guy is. Here's one of them. It's a picture of the murderer, and he's holding a sign that says, "I support women's rights because I love the women in my family." Now, no word on whether he likes the wife of the person he murdered. I'm not sure how many rights he was concerned about in her life, but apparently because he likes abortion and he likes another type of murder, he's supposed to be praised to the point of like, I mean, I read the comments, unfortunately, under this piece to remind myself how horrible human beings are. And it's all this stuff. He's such a sweetheart. He only does things out of the goodness of his heart. And when he does it 100%. Oh, I guess that's true. It's such a rare quality to find in people these days. Yeah, murder is a rare quality to find. And I guess you are going in 100% when you execute a man on the street for no reason. That is, I guess, 100% into your beliefs. And part of me, when this story first happened, I had this feeling of, well, what we're going to find out is that this guy's mom or dad got cancer and had a problem with the healthcare system. Maybe the claims were denied, and it was United Healthcare he was with, and that's why they decided to do this. To be clear, that would not justify the action. Even if it hit him like that, it would not justify the action. But when we find out about this guy, none of this stuff happened. He had some health problems of his own, all seemed to be covered. It's not even clear that he was even with United Healthcare at all. So it's just complete nonsense. And you read that when you find out, you read his manifesto of sorts, which I want to go through some of this. Here is his manifesto. And it's really disturbing for multiple reasons. The first kind of beginnings of it kind of just goes through. He says to the feds, I'll keep this short because I do respect what you do for your country. I'm sure you really do. To save you the lengthy investigation, I state plainly I wasn't working with anyone. Well, you can always trust a murderer when they say that, but I do believe in this case it's true. This was fairly trivial. And I think that's a wonderful way to describe taking a man's life, a father and a husband. This is fairly trivial, not a big deal to him at all. So again, this high-minded view of like, I was taking this guy out because I was wronged or that society's being wronged. You'll see how freaking, I almost said the other word, how freaking thin this is when we get down into it. He talks about some of his plans. He says, I do apologize for any strife or trauma, but it had to be done. Okay, so why did it have to be done? And by the way, I'm sure the family's fine with that. He apologized for the trauma. What's the big deal? Here's what he said. Frankly, these parasites simply had it coming. Again, not specifically about this individual man who was murdered in the street, but just generally speaking, these parasites, which I guess are healthcare executives or something. Why? Why are they parasites? Are you ready for the dumbest healthcare argument you can possibly hear? Now, go back to the beginning, the first time you ever heard about a healthcare argument, what conservatives believe, what liberals believe. You heard stuff like this. A reminder, the U.S. has the number one most expensive healthcare system in the world, yet we rank roughly 42 in life expectancy. Pause on that for a second and think about what just happened. First of all, he didn't even bother to look up the exact number of what they were, what we are in healthcare. Roughly number 42. That was his level of dedication to this cause. It wasn't that something happened to him, that there was something specific, that it was just like, hey, we're like number 42 in life expectancy. Now, the life expectancy point is like the first thing you think about when you start thinking about healthcare. Because there is that, you know, wow, number one in spending and number 40, whatever, roughly number 42 in life expectancy. And then you take 10 minutes and you think, well, why did that happen? Let me look into the details. And the very first thing you'll come across is why that is, it's not exactly true the way he stated it, but why that concept is true. Largely, it's because, number one, car accidents. We have roads, we drive fast, we travel more in cars, we get in more car accidents. Number two, I mean, right now, it is has some issues with, there's talking about things like gun violence, talking about things like, opioid overdoses, things that lead to us to have higher, earlier deaths than that. So, for example, if you're driving down the street, you run over a bunch of kindergarten students, your average age of death is going to go down. Your life expectancy goes down. Is that the fault of the healthcare system? Is it? I mean, you could argue sort of a peripheral thing when it comes to the opioid issue that we've had very, very recently. This stat has been true for a very, very long time. Now, there are other liberal complaints. Gun violence, they could say, ban all guns, and some of that would go away. Of course, there are other issues related to that that we've discussed many times. But like, this is like basic day one understanding of healthcare, that he didn't even bother to clear that bar. He doesn't even understand that, you know, when you go through all of this, you take out those types of things that have nothing to do with the healthcare system, obviously. You know, getting a car accident's got nothing to do with the healthcare system. When you take all that stuff out, we perform very, very well. And not to mention, the reason why our healthcare is expensive is we are creating all of the innovations. We are the country that gets all the Nobel Prize winners, all the companies that create all the medical innovations that these other nations wind up using. After we've paid the bills to research and develop them, they wind up taking advantage of that. I think, as a person, as a human being who actually gives a crap about other people in the world, I think that's a good thing. I'm pretty happy about the way that works. We wind up, yes, paying somewhat of high healthcare prices. But like when you look at that whole system as a globe, it's very, very good for the poorer countries, not quite as good for the rich ones. What's interesting about that is that's what progressives should like, right? The rich people are paying for all the innovations. The poorer nations wind up taking advantage of those innovations later on. That, in theory, is what they talk about. Anyway, I'm going much too long on this. Let me just finish this up. United, meaning United Healthcare, is the largest company in the U.S. by market cap, behind only Apple, Google, and Walmart. Why would that? Again, this is not because he had a personal issue or even knows if this particular CEO is bad, just that they're a big company. This is how dumb this analysis is. The reality is these companies have gotten too powerful and they continue to abuse our company for immense profit. Their profit margin is very small, by the way. And because the American public has allowed them, misspelled, to get away with it. Obviously, the problem, and this is the part that really hit me, because it's one thing to think you're really smart and be dumb, okay? He is dumb. He's an idiot. This guy's a moron. He doesn't even know what he's talking about. He doesn't know the basics of the argument that he murdered someone over. But a lot of times, you have this sort of intersection. We talk about it often with people like Jasmine Crockett or AOC. This intersection of stupidity and certainty. And it's really where a lot of the problems in our society lied. This guy, though, is, yes, he's dumb, but he doesn't even think he's smart. This is what he says. Obviously, the problem is more complex, but I don't have space and frankly do not pretend to be the most qualified person to lay out the full argument. And he goes on to cite, you know who is really good? Michael Moore, just to show you the level of thought he's on. But let me just give you this, the little side thought here when we're talking about, if you're thinking about becoming a murderer, maybe learn about the topic you're going to murder somebody about. Maybe learn about it a little bit. Maybe you should at least convince yourself that you are the best person to make those arguments. If you're so stupid and so uninformed that you yourself are aware that you yourself do not have the knowledge to even make the judgment on the topic you're talking about, perhaps skip the murder. I know this is a difficult line for people to understand. I understand that this is a high bar I'm setting, not only for the murderers we're talking about today, but also the freaking cheerleaders that sit around and disgustingly hope to hop into his pants because they love the murder he committed. If you can't even get to the level where you think you're an expert, doesn't matter if you're right or wrong about that, you might still be a moron, but you can't even get to the level where you think you're smart about this topic, maybe skip the murdering. Now, I have absolutely no doubt that this idiot would wind up later on in life being a complete failure. I have no doubt that his life would amount to nothing without this. So maybe he sees this as a win. Maybe he does. Because, you know, looking at the way that he did this, obviously, at the end of his life, no one would look back and remember him for a second. And I will say this, because of him murdering this guy, who many people report was a very good father and a good man and not the type that even was a participant in the bad things of healthcare, which they do exist, but he wasn't even the guy leading that. All that being said, you look back at all of this and you realize that this sort of weird cultish behavior evolving around this person is a sign not only of a sick person or a pathetic, groupie journalist, but also of a very sick society, a psychotic society, with the incentives we discussed about fueling all of that on social media. We are going down a very dark road, and honestly, it's hard to see how this turns around without divine intervention. Well, in crazy times like these, you need to know where your money is going. And let me ask you a couple of questions. One, are your investments funding the type of destruction of American values we've been talking about today? Are they going to the areas you want them to? Are they being pushed to agendas that you don't love, that you think are wrong for our country? It's not just about making a return. You got to make a return on your investments, but it's not just about that. You work hard for your money. Your money should work hard for you and your principles, the things that you believe in. That's why I work with Constitution Wealth. These are not just investment professionals, which they are, but they're patriots who understand that building a strong portfolio should not mean compromising your values. Constitution Wealth is part of a growing parallel economy, and they help you put your investments where your heart is, supporting companies that reflect the kind of America you want. Not the woke nonsense, not the stuff we were talking about in this previous monologue. A lot of funds are attached to that craziness, and I know you don't want any part of that. So do what I did. Get a free consultation today at constitutionwealth.com/blaze. It's constitutionwealth.com/blaze. You should know that Constitution Wealth is a registered investment advisor. You should review Constitution Wealth disclosures at constitutionwealth.com to understand their services and fees. All investing involves risk, of course, including the risk of loss. I am a client of the firm, and this is a paid endorsement. My opinions, however, as always, are my own.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse, nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
April 19th was a special day.
We were having breakfast, and then there was this explosion that rocked us out of our table.
You probably heard it and felt it, an explosion of some kind downtown.
We've never had a bomb like this in the United States.
It's a really, really powerful new documentary. It is called Oklahoma City Bombing, American Terror. It releases on April 18th, and I'm so excited to welcome the executive producer and director of the documentary to the program. It's Greg Tillman. Greg, this is an amazing project. Thanks for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you, Stu. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I will say, watching it is at times really difficult. I was able to watch a screener of it last night, and you kind of show a little bit of that in the quick preview clip that we just showed, where it starts with video inside the federal building on April 19th, you know, people going about their lives at work. The access to the video that you got is absolutely amazing.
Well, actually, that video was shot, I think, a couple years before the 19th, okay, by a young woman named Kim Burgess. And she was just making a, you know, video postcard for her folks back home. And it's the kind of place where every day is sort of the same. You know, it's a government building. Everybody has a job to do. So I think it's very indicative. Amy Downs, who's one of the characters in the show, who's you see in that clip that we used just briefly, will tell you that that's the way the building looked every day. And these are the folks that she worked with every day. And so we were lucky to get that footage. And there's actually a moment where Kim, who shot it, gives the camera to somebody else, and she's sitting behind a desk, and she didn't make it. She's like several people in that footage. She did not make it through the bombing.
Yeah, that's the thing I think you did really well with this is kind of taking us into that moment and meeting the people who are actually involved, because it turned into obviously a massive national story so quickly that a lot of that was lost. And, you know, seeing the people who were there, you talked to, maybe we can go through some of the guests here, because I thought that was really powerful. You have pretty much everybody that is still with us that was involved in this story at almost every level. Can you kind of go through your access to these people and how you found them and kind of go through maybe a little roster here of some of the people you talked to?
Sure. I mean, you know, the thing is, there's no way to go through everybody because there are so many people that were affected. I read recently that 360,000 people in Oklahoma personally knew someone who was in the building. There was that much connection to the community, you know, so there are just hundreds and thousands of stories that we'll never be able to tell and never be able to hear. But what we were looking for were people who were at any given point from the moment that bomb went off in the next 72 hours and then through the trial of McVeigh and Terry Nichols, were at the heart of the story. We're kind of as close as possible to the center of whatever was going on. And we were really lucky to find some folks. Dr. Carl Spengler is a great example. He hasn't spoken to many people since the bombing happened. He was an emergency room resident at Oklahoma University Hospital. And had just come off a 15-hour rotation at night, and he was having breakfast with a couple of friends just five blocks away from where the bomb went off. And, you know, it would be very understandable for anybody to go the opposite direction of something like that. You know, it's the second largest explosion on U.S. soil after the testing of the atomic bomb in Los Alamos in New Mexico. So massive, massive impact all across downtown. And instead, he goes right to the location where the bomb went off and gets there, you know, before really almost anybody else. It's quiet. The ambulances and fire trucks, all the crazy chaos that's about to happen hasn't gotten there yet. And it's just a moment of calm after the explosion and before all of the rescue attempts begin. And he spent the next 20 hours just saving lives.
Yeah, I will say one of the most difficult parts to watch of the documentary was the doctor describing the choices he had to make in those moments. It's just completely inhuman to have to be able to sit there and, you know, decide, you know, who you're going to try to put attention to. And you know, when children are involved and everything, I mean, that was riveting and really disturbing.
Over and over and over again. And so many times that we didn't have room for in the show, we're meeting people who found something inside themselves that they might not ever have known about, you know, some heroic ability that in that moment they have to make a decision, you know, do I run away or do I try to help? And so many people risk their lives to try to help people. And, you know, there was one woman, Rebecca Anderson, was a nurse, 37 years old, who wasn't in the building when it exploded, but she ran into the building and tried to save people. And she got hit by a piece of falling debris and died shortly after. So everyone who went into that building was risking their lives. They did not know if the rest of the building was going to come down, you know, as soon as they walked through the doors.
You even talked to in the documentary a woman who was literally buried alive in the explosion and sat there with, you know, at times thinking she had maybe already died, hoping to get rescued. Can you kind of talk about her story a little bit?
Yeah, Amy Petty Downs is amazing. She was a clerk in the Federal Credit Union when the bomb went off, and you know, in the blink of an eye, seven floors rise up and then come down and pancake. So almost everybody who was in that area of the building didn't make it, but there were a few people who were lucky, and there was a pocket for them to survive in, and she was one of them. And she spent about 6 hours trapped in the rubble. And it's an amazing story to listen to her talk about that time, you know, to have that much time to think about your life and think about what you've done and what you hope you'll do if you get out. And she's an amazing storyteller, and she really took stock of her life. And after the explosion and after she was rescued, she went on to just completely changed her life. She lost 200 pounds. She became a triathlete. She became the CEO of the organization that she was working for as a clerk on the day that the bomb exploded.
Yeah, that's one of the first things you notice in her story is they show her the footage from 1995, and she certainly weighed a lot more. It's just a fascinating to see that as she's evolved over time. You also go into the investigation quite a bit as to how they found McVeigh, how they pieced all these pieces together. And, you know, it's hard to imagine a story kind of being crazier with the each coincidence piling on top of each other for them to actually find McVeigh. I mean, it really wasn't like this thing where, okay, we know it's this guy, let's go find him. It was kind of lucky that they had him in custody already.
It was lucky, but, you know, I was talking to Walt Lamar, who's an FBI agent who's in the show a couple days ago, and we were talking about the arrest that Oklahoma State Trooper Charlie Hanger was able to arrest McVeigh. He pulled him over when he saw that the guy didn't have a license plate in his car that he was using after the bombing. And we were talking about whether or not that was luck. And Walt said, you know, there's luck, but I think there's also cop instincts. And I think a lot of cops, he said, I've seen throughout my career, a lot of times cops just have a little extra radar that allows them to see something that other people wouldn't. And I think on that day, Charlie Hanger, you know, he was on high alert, and yeah, he pulled McVeigh over, and thankfully he did. And McVeigh spent the next 40 hours in jail. And until they realized we've got the guy who we think might be the bomber just down the road in a small jail in Perry.
And there's several coincidences went into the idea that he was even still in jail. He probably should have been out by the time that happened. So you watch the documentary to get those details because it's incredible. Yeah. Do you think, when you kind of looking back at this story, as I was watching it, I was kind of like, I remember it happening. I was like in high school when this happened, but I remember it happening and I remember the impact of it. It was obviously a massive story. But at some point watching it, I kind of was reminded how crazy the story was, how big of a deal it was, how huge the explosion was in all of this. And I was wondering if perhaps just because of the fact that after 1995, you have the years, you have McVeigh, you have the trial, you have his execution, and it's only a few months after he's executed that 9/11 happens. And I think in some ways, 9/11 being the incredibly massive event that it was, almost makes us forget the intensity of this and how wild it was that this would happen in a place like Oklahoma City.
I think that's true. I think when this happened, it was a 9/11 event. It was international news. You know, there's a quick montage in the show of a bunch of anchors from around the world who are all reporting on this. And it was the news story for the next 3 weeks everywhere on the planet. And but there were also things that were fighting it at that moment in terms of billing. O.J. Simpson was still on trial at the time. And then, yeah, a few years later, 9/11 happened. And it's the kind of thing that, you're only as big as your explosion, you know, for a while. And I think it's important to continue to remember this story in the same way that we remember 9/11. It's just another example of the kind of horrible consequences of divisiveness and hate taken to its extreme. And I think for that reason, it's very important to continue to pay attention to this story.
How long did this take to put together?
We started about 2 years ago, probably, and then really got into it about a year and a half ago, started doing interviews.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very detailed, and to see how the footage and all the guests that you put together, including, you know, the officer that pulled over Timothy McVeigh, all of that in one place was really, really impressive. And I will say, as a person who, you know, I love documentaries, I love watching this stuff. I like the fact that you stuck to the story. Like, it wasn't like, you know, here's 9 million conspiracy theories it could have been. It wasn't like, hey, here's who my political enemy of the day. Maybe I can tie this to them. It wasn't like that at all. You went through the story and stuck to it. And I thought you brought us into the middle of it. As much as that doesn't sound like an appealing thing, it really was an intense piece. And I appreciate the way you did it.
Thank you. Well, that's what we're going for. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Greg Tillman, executive producer and director of Oklahoma City Bombing, American Terror. You can watch this on Netflix. It comes out on April 18th. Definitely worth watching. And kind of reminding you of one of the craziest events in American history. Greg, thanks so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu. Appreciate it.
El Salvador President Bukele was in the White House yesterday. In fact, I was looking at this from issue one of Frontier. It's a story about him. We sent a reporter down there to see what the country was actually like, because I've heard a lot about it. But, you know, you don't get a lot of deep stuff. And that's kind of what Frontier is trying to do. It's a magazine. It's associated with the Blaze through Blaze Unlimited. There's not a lot out there that feels real. Everything's kind of curated and edited and designed to push an agenda. Frontier, I think, matters for this reason. Blaze Media dropped issue two. This is issue one I'm holding here. It's the kind of thing that kind of makes you stop and say, you know, finally, there's something here that's going to tell a different story, something with guts. Try to tell the truth without asking for permission. Frontier is not just a magazine. It is a statement. It's, you know, it's no fluff, no filler, just real stories, serious reporting, and voices that go deep into this stuff, the kind of content that the mainstream media will not touch. Issue two is coming out. It delivers really great investigative pieces, exclusive interviews. The design is great. It's the type of thing you kind of just, like, leave on your coffee table. And even, you know, a year after it came out, and it's still going to be relevant and still going to be a beautiful piece for your house. It looks like a collector's edition, honestly, more than like an issue of a magazine. If you missed issue one, you can read all that story about Bukele and so many others. You get that in full digital right now. You cannot grab Frontier at the store, however. You got to get through Blaze Unlimited. It's blazeunlimited.com/stew, blazeunlimited.com/stew. Subscribe now. You get issue 2 and a high-resolution digital copy of issue 1, plus early access to events, members-only content, a premium experience from Blaze Media. It's not about collecting stuff, magazines, whatever. It's about connecting to something real. And that's something that tells the truth. So don't miss it. It's blazeunlimited.com/stew. Do it now. blazeunlimited.com/stew. Get excited, everybody. Buzz is building around Ocasio-Cortez's future. Really? I guess because she's went on tour with Bernie Sanders. I would not at all be surprised to see her become the new Bernie, right? Like the new kind of, I mean, I guess she kind of already is. She's just not as old and crotchety as Bernie, although she has crazier eyes, I'll say that. AOC has been traveling with Bernie. They're getting big crowds. They went to Coachella, at least he went to Coachella, I guess. I don't know. And I thought about this. Now, we've been seeing nonstop coverage of AOC since the minute she started running. I mean, like, is there a person you could be more sick of than AOC? With all that coverage, she's still behind Cory Booker running for president in 2028. That is pathetic. And also Kamala Harris. Here's the Cory Booker surging out to second place in the 2028 Democratic poll, which is interesting. Stephen A. Smith is also included in this poll. Here's the results. Kamala Harris, 28%. Obviously terrible. Cory Booker is at 11, but up 9%. So no interest at all until he did this speech, which obviously is going to fade for our memories very, very quickly. And it was really a pathetic gesture. Pete Buttigieg is down a little bit to 3%. AOC at 7%. Again, that's pretty bad. Fourth place for AOC with all the attention she's received. I mean, that is really terrible. Then you got Tim Walz at 5%, which that's, come on, no one's voting for Tim Walz. Gavin Newsom only at 4%. He's down 3 points. So not helping himself apparently in the primary. And then you've got Josh Shapiro, who's probably the best candidate they have at 3%. Whitmer, Pritzker, John Stewart at 3%. Michael Moore, I guess, at 2%. I don't know, or some more. Then Bashir and Stephen A. Smith only at 1%. So not a lot of desire for Stephen A. Smith. And that story's been pushed on us quite a bit as well. Elizabeth Warren is saying we don't have to wait for the courts to step in to fight Trump tariffs. She says the courts may step in here, but we don't have to wait for the courts. The question is whether our Republicans will join us on this. Now, one thing that's interesting and very shocking when you see something like Elizabeth Warren. By the way, was she even included in this? Did I mention her? She wasn't even included in that poll. That's a disaster for her. Anyway, what she's saying here, and this is very difficult to understand, but is actually true. The Congress gets the power to regulate tariffs. This is directly in the Constitution, something that I have supported returning to Congress for a very long time. Not going to switch it because Elizabeth Warren is suddenly for it. And that's the hypocrisy here. Where were they all this time? Now, all of a sudden, because Donald Trump is president, now they want Congress to have a voice here. They've never said this crap before. This has been a Democratic priority for 100 years to raise tariffs on whatever because of their union friends. And now, all of a sudden, shockingly, they're on the side. Obviously, this is just an anti-Trump measure and not a real heartfelt constitutional belief. By the way, same kind of nonsense going on with Harvard. Harvard has rejected Trump's demands, gets hit by $2.3 billion in funding freeze. They said no government, regardless of which party is in power, should dictate what private universities can teach, who they can admit and hire, and which areas of study and inquiry they can pursue. I would agree with that statement, but they can't. They can't control that at all. All they can do is take the money away from you. And you know, I know you got a $53 billion endowment, but apparently that's just not enough. Back in a second. Okay, so here's what happened. When you're, you know, one of the things we try to do on this program is be useful to you. Hopefully we're giving you information you can actually use in your life. And sometimes it's like, well, hey, we know about a particular value. So if you're out shopping, we can get you something that's a little bit cheaper, maybe something you want to have around your house. And that's, I guess, part of what we wanted to tell you about here at Wicked Wonderland. It's a store in Central Florida. And I mean, they had some issues with it. You know, for example, they were selling human bones. Now, normally you'd say that doesn't sound so wonderful, but let me tell you about these prices. Two human skull fragments, only $90. A human clavicle and scapula, $90. A human rib, only $35. A human vertebrae, $35. And I will say, a little overpriced, a partial human skull for $600. I mean, for full skull, maybe $600. She did say that she had documentation saying that she bought these fair and square, but she didn't have it. She couldn't provide it at the moment, so.